maybe the other thing I do here, I'll write down too when we talk about these pictures. This is number 4.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of.
You said that's you on the right when you were a teenager?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How old do you think you were then?
I must have been about 18 or 19 at that time.
And whose house is that you're in front of? Is it your house?
No, this is not, this is my house. Seems like that was where she was. Grew up this building.
Oh,
that looks like behind their house, my niece.
And what was her name again?
Lena. Her name was Lena Maska at that time.
Maska.
M-A-S-K-A. Yeah.
And she's still alive? She has a married name?
She got married name now, Lena Williams. She's in Anchorage. She works in Anna's Hospital now.
Oh. Yeah. And she was your cousin or something?
No, he was my nephew. My nephew or my niece.
Niece.
My niece, yeah. I always get mixed up with my nephew and niece. You know.
So what were you doing when you were about this age, 18 and 19 years old? How would you spend your time?
Well, I spent my time mostly running back and forth in the lab, you know, but I was in a good shape in those days. I could run. I used to run all the way to the lab in snowshoes. And
yeah, I remember you told that one story about the time you were running and, and Ed.
What was that? I don't know.
Time you're running, and Edgar Cowan saw you when you were running down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in December. I was going for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some of those things that the young generations could do right now is they could do things like that, you know. Like my boys, and I know some of them could be a good runner. And a good athlete, but I cannot breathe into them. That's the way I grew up. My father couldn't put me, you know, in those days where I'd live off the country. And most of your power is the most important thing, that you had to go out and kill something for your family, you know. I don't think my boys would ever run across the river in snowshoes right now. As young as they are, you know. And those days, we used to run a moose down, you know, and we had to catch him. We just got to catch it. And if a moose run away from you, you just got to run him down or tire him out.
You think that the young men don't do that now because they have other ways of getting food?
I don't think there's no young men that will do it now because... you know, and most of them are used to go out. Well, there's more games right now, too, than in those days. And so you can go out and drive around 40 or 50 miles down here, and you run into a moose, and you're right there on your snow machine or right on the river. It's like, well, it's against the law now to do it, you know, like that. You know, but anybody would do it. I'd do it, too. You know, if I see a moose in the river with my snow machine, I wouldn't get off my snow machine and kill. I mean, try to get off my snow machine and try to kill. I killed from right there. as long as nobody don't see me.
Yeah. Well, Well, that main thing is to be getting food, so however you have to get it.
Right, yeah. The main thing is just getting food. Well, like for instance, when I was a little boy, I was going to school yet then. Guys used to go trapping. The people with a family had to go trapping. I know my dad used to do that. My parents used to both go out, my mother and my dad. They used to go out for 30, sometimes 30 days. And I used to be with them. And I walked every day after day in that 30 days. I walked in snowshoes. I either walk in behind the dog team or ahead of the dog team or running, you know. My parents were, they were old, so they had to use the dog team. And, you know, then I was young and then I could do all the work, you know. Then it don't seem to bother me because I was already, broken in, like for snowshoes or hard walking all day long. And it doesn't bother me a bit, you know.
Were a lot of people walking like that?
Oh yeah, all my brothers were like that, and all my brothers and all the people around town were, I mean, the guys that are in my age, were the same way.
They all had to be like that.
They all had to be like that.
Mm-hmm. But, who are some of the people in town now that are like that?
Well, there's Franklin, Plasker, Simon, James.
Simon
Stanley. Uh-huh. And James Solomon, Junior Solomon. But the guy the most I think of right now is Clement Ismailka, my brother-in-law. He's the one that teach me a lot of hunting after he got married with my sister. And I was just about 15 years old when he first got married with my sister. So I stayed out fall camp with him, and you know, he was one of the best runners along the Yukon River, I think, in snowshoes.
What kind of things did, you know, like what distances did he run on snowshoes?
He'd run for a long, long distance. In fact, he could run all day in snowshoes, and I couldn't do that in those days, you know, till I grew up a little bit more, and then I could keep up with him, you know.
Did you used to try and keep up with him?
I used to try to keep up with him, but I couldn't. He used to run, like if we're running after something, you know. What my dad used to tell me when I was growing up, I listened to my dad quite a bit. My dad used to scold us every morning because I had six other brothers that were in the same house, you know, not like the house we got right now, no rooms, you know.
It's
just a small little house, probably 24 by 30 was the biggest house, and maybe six of us were in Darien. My dad used to get up early in the morning and used to scold us every morning because we sleep too long. You should be going out there cutting wood, running around, have exercise, or just move around the wood out there. You know, well, when I started to grow up, then I started to think of it. Started to think a little bit more about it. But all my brothers, they were drinking, you know, so he was a little bit harder on them than me because I never drank it at that time. I mean, well, I never drank all my life, you know. Then my mother used to cry to me. She said, "Don't drink, don't drink." My mother never used to drink or smoke or use no tobacco. "Don't drink, my son," he used to tell me. But after I got married, and I began to think that way about my children. And I began to think, well, I don't need to drink. I said, I got a family I want that make me happy. There's nothing better than my family. I began to think, you know, there's nothing in this world that's going to beat my family. I began to think, and I said, that means I love my family, and then so I decided, well, I don't need to drink. I said, I'm having just as much fun as guys that drink. In fact, I get more fun than them. You know, I know what's going on, and then where the experience came from was the people that goes to Nolada for Christmas holidays, stick dance, potlatch, dog race. Some of them don't even see it. They just go up there and get drunk and stay drunk for a couple of days and come back down. Then they'd ask you a question, what was going on in your ladder, you know. Plasker Nikolai will tell you the same thing. The last time we had stick dance here in 68, we had a stick dance here. And he was drinking at that time. And he's one of my best friends. I grew up with him, Plasker Nikolai. I grew up with him. He's just a year younger than me. In fact, we used to go out traveling. We used to sleep together. We used to do anything with one another. You know, I never got into an argument up till now. You know, we're just like better than brothers, I'd say. And now, you know, we used to... I forget what I was going to say, how I was going to put it.
Talking about the stick dance?
Oh, the stick dance, yeah. Okay, the stick dance. I was going to tell you about. Well, my wife was living that time, and I was trying to make my wife happy any way, like if there was a, if there was some kind, she used to like to dance, I know that, you know, on live music. So therefore, I went up, we had the stick dance. I had 42 people in my house, and in this house right here I'm living in now. Visitors, 42 visitors, besides my family, because there was no other place that they could stay around. I mean, all that, there was that many visitors in town. And then there was, people had no room in places. Well, teacher used to tell me I could use the school if I... But I thought, well, if you want to stop in my place, that's fine. So I let all the women sleep upstairs and let the men sleep downstairs, you know. And, you know, after the last night of the stick dance, and we came, I went out and I told the guys, well, this is our last at the community hall. I said, all our stick dance all over now. I think we're going to have a dance tonight, live music. Then we found out we had no violin in town, you know. And then I called Galena. And then she said that there were some guys here from Galena too. And they said they had a violin. The city got violin up there, they said. Well, it was already getting late in the afternoon. So I went around town and I said, could you donate a dollar or two? I want to go to Galena, get the violin, instrument. All we had was this guitar, you know. And so I went around and then I collected $100 in no time. All right. So I said, I'll go good for the rest. The charge was $160. I said, I'll go good for the rest. So I went over to George Madras' place. Unicade Air Taxi was here. I went over to him. You know, he was staying in there. I went over. His name was Wilford Jr., but he got an Eskimo name. Called him Boyak. You know, I said, Boyak, you won't take me to Galena for what? He thought I was going for liquor. You know, I said, I want to pick up a violin up there in Galena. So I'm going to have live music tonight. I said, okay. You know, he liked me very much with that Wilford Jr., Boyak. He know me really well and he liked me pretty much. So he said, "What? Are you ready now?" And he said, yeah. So I came back down and then I took my buddy. I said, let's go to Galena. He said, there's lots of room in that plane. He's got 185 plane back there. He's going to take me to Galena. There'll be lots of room in there. Let's go up to Glen and pick up that violin. Then one of his people from Unicade wanted to go. You know, but he was half drunk. I mean, he was half shot. I went over, got back up there, and then this guy wanted to go. I said, no, boy. I said, no, I know what this guy want to go for. He want to go for liquor. I said, he's short of liquor. He want to go up and get some liquor. And I don't want to take that kind of guy. So I said, if you want to go for a ride, I'm willing to take him for a ride with us. He said, I told him, you know, and he said, okay. He started to go over there. He said, no, he want to go with us. I said, I'm charging that plane. It's my plane. I'm charging it. I said, if you want to go, you go on that plane. I wouldn't go on it. I know what you want. I told him, you want liquor. You're short of liquor right now. You know, he didn't say anything. Then, you know, then, no, I got to go with you. He started on the sleigh, you know. I told him, no, I'm not going over. There's some other service here that will take me. So Wilford Jr. went over and started talking to me in Eskimo in his own language. Pretty soon he got off the sleigh, you know. Good one, let's go, he said. So I went back to the field. I took my buddy with me, you know, and then went up. When we got to Galena, and then there was no violin. The city didn't have no violin. So there was a guy had violin in Nularo. So I told Boyak, I said, can you call Simeon Mountain in Nularo and ask him to pick up that violin in Berkman's house, Berkman Ismailka's house? And he told me where it was in case I didn't get that one in Galena. He told me it's in his house. He said, break the door and go and get that violin, he told me, you know, before I left here. So we called up on the radio while we were coming back down. So, well, Simon Mountain was already down here, but he had somebody to take care of his place, you know. He was a postmaster up there. And then he was going back and forth to the airplane, hauling passengers too. There was just a taxi service he had too, besides that. And so we landed there, and then pretty soon this guy brought up the violin, you know, this guy that was taking his place. Henry, my buddy, went over there and went over and picked up that violin. This guy won $2 for it, you know, for hauling up the field. And boy, I get a lot of kick out of it. He went over there and grabbed that violin. He said, this is not person. This is only instrument. You know, pay $2 to bring it up. He told me, grab that violin. Then, let's go, buddy. He said, he didn't even give that guy $2, you know. So we got back on a plane, and then there was a girl there that wanted to come down. I told him, there's going to be good dancing in Caltech tonight. You want to come down? He said, well, get on the plane. Get on the plane. We're charging this plane. I tell him, yeah, tell her, you know. And then when we got down there, well, I was sitting down by this boy, Boyak, you know, and then he asked me, you want to click the click that money from that girl? He told me, you're charging the plane, he told me, Boyak, you know. I told him, no, it's okay. I said, no, we'll just give her a free ride. I told him, that's okay. It's your charger, he told me, you know, because you already paid me for the charge, and you could click this guy's fare if you want the seat fare coming down. I told him, no, that's okay. Then we come down, then after the potlatch, we had start a half dance. Oh, gee, we had a really good time, you know. Well, my wife was really enjoying herself, what I wanted out of her, you know, because I know she always liked to dance. And some other women that are her age, too, was the same way. Well, the dance was going along pretty good. Pretty soon, the young guys they didn't want the violin. They just want the guitar and some, I don't know how you call it. Jitterbuck, you know, that's all they wanted. And then they said they took some guys off from the up there on the stage, you know, where they were playing violin and guitar. Oh, I really got mad. I just went up there. And I know these two young guys from Nularo. I went over and told them, I said, distance. I spent over $160 today for these people to enjoy this violin and guitar music. And I want them to enjoy it right now. You boys just get off that stage, I told them, and let these other guys play violin and guitar, you know, the elder guys. Well, they didn't say anything. They were mad too, but I was mad too, you know. Can we play one or two music? I said, one music, and you get off that stage, I told him. I got so brave, you know. It was young guys too. But they played one music, and that's all, you know. One music, and then they got off. They want to play rock and roll. That's what they wanted, you know. But the older people didn't want it, you know, because they never have liked music for quite a long time, ever since I was a single boy, I guess. And that's what I used to go to Norada for, mostly, just to have a dance, you know.
So what kind of dance would they do with that violin music?
Well, they had waltz, foxtrot, one-step, square dance, Virginia Rail or Shottish, you know what, all different kind of dances, you know. Mostly foxtrot and one-step we used to have. But when I was a little boy, well, when I was about 10 years old, I guess, they used to have nothing but square dance.
Everybody danced.
That hall used to be out here on the bank, out here where the flagpole is right now. And boy, that place used to roar all night long. You know, with live music.
Who would play music?
Well, they had quite a few instruments, musicians at that time. My brother-in-law was one of them. Bernard Alexey was his name. And this guy, Bernard Peter, left one of them. Picture was in here. Yeah, him. Him. He used to play the violin too.
What's his name?
Bernard Peter.
Oh, that's, yeah. That number, photograph number 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he used to play. He used to play for the dance too. Mm-hmm.
So when would they have dances in those days?
Okay, we didn't have dances every day in those days. You know, only time we used to come back between Christmas and New Year. Well, all during that week we used to have dance practically every night. You know, that one whole week. And, you know, like I say, that was New Year comes and then the older people want to have their time too. Like washtub dance. You know, the first night they have a washtub dance. I mean, the first day they have a blanket toss. You know, they go around to every house and then people throw in some food into a blanket.
And they're singing.
And singing, right. Mm-hmm. They'll do that on New Year's Day. The second day they would have a mask dance. They call it mask dance.
And what is that mask dance?
It's just the songs, like you would come in and bring in some food into the hall, you know, and then dance. And they call that a mass dance.
Did you wear masks?
Well, some of them used masks, but a lot of them didn't wear masks in young days, you know. We never used to wear masks. We used to go out there and just dance, Eskimo dance. You know, like how they do at the Olympic right now, Eskimo dance. Only thing, our songs were a little bit longer than the way they do it, you know.
So is it kind of combination of Eskimo and Indian?
And Indian, right. Uh-huh. This is a combination, that something like that. But this used to come mostly, you could do it mostly any time. Even right now, we could go do it right now. You know, it's just no kinds of superstitions, but people just gather around and kind of make one big party. That's just for fun, yeah. But what do you... Like Franklin and Plasker and me, you know, we always talk about it. We said we should go to make some kind of dance like that just to gather up the people, you know. But, you know, Plasker quit drinking, Franklin quit drinking, you know. And ever since they quit drinking, I got pretty close to them, you know, real close. Just like I treat them, just like my own brother. You know, only time a fellow quit drinking, I think he's my best friend.
It's a hard thing to do, isn't it?
That's pretty hard thing to do, is right. And I try to convince a lot of people, you know, just it don't have to take drink to have good time. I said, I never drink all my life, and I still had more fun than you guys that drink. I tell them, you know, every time there's a dog race or Anchorage, the Four Rendezvous, or Fairbanks, the Winter Carnival, I always go around there, and my kids always happy to see me. You know, are you going to come, Daddy? You know, I got to get a daughter in Anchorage. Are you going to come for the Rendezvous? My daughter in Fairbanks, the same way. Are you going to come? Well, you know, I'm enjoying myself, you know, that I never drink, and you're always happy to see me, you know. But I know a lot of parents are not like that to their... I mean, a lot of guys are not like that to their parents.
Because, you know, they're drinking and...
It's just sometimes, you know, some of the... Well, I could see that, you know, some of the people that never drink and their parents would drink, they would really get embarrassed, you know. And a drinking people would do a lot of things what a sober guy won't do. I learn all those things by experience. I don't learn it, I never learned by book, but experience is my best teacher.
Really trying to cut down on drinking?
Boy, I was really tickled when this winter when they cut down on the drinking. You know. Yeah. I don't know. It seems like it was pretty good there for a while. Everybody followed the rules pretty good. You know, I was so proud of it. I even tell guys in Anchorage. You know, it seems like it was quietened down quite a bit. And my son here, Goodwin Jr., is on city council, and he was hitting real hard on it, and he likes to drink. And I had to go over there and tell him, you got two kids, you got two little boys there, my daughter-in-law. I had to go there and tell him that how you guys are drinking when you got two little kids. I told him, that's the best thing you ever going to have. There's two little boys right there. The best thing you're going to have while you're living. You never think about that. I said, I didn't bring you up like that, Junior. My daughter-in-law was sitting down by me. She was just crying, you know. I said, Junior, I never brought you up like that. I said, if your mother was living right now, I told my son, I said, you'd never touch those two kids. I said, I take them away every time you drink. You never think about those kids. I said, that's not the way I brought you up. I said, I never brought no kinds of liquor in this house for you to teach you how to drink. I always try to bring something that's good for your health. And I brought one case of beer this winter. I mean, last fall. I brought it in the house and I left it right by my steps, you know. And my boys come and ask me, said, can we borrow a six-pack, Daddy? Can we borrow it? I said, no. I said, when I'm ready, I'll tell you. So I invite them all for supper that one evening. I told my daughter-in-law and my daughter to go cook big supper and want to invite everybody. I said, we're going to invite the junior and his wife back there, Harold Simakin, my nephew and his wife. And then we're going to have a big party. So then I sat around the table, then I opened that case of beer. I said, okay, help yourself now, you boys. I said, I never brought anything like this for you boys in here, not even once while your kids are grown up. But now I'm going to tell you. I t- tell them. You know. I started with my boy Junior, and I told him, you got two nice little boys back there, two nice heartbreaking kids. I don't think there's nothing better than those two little kids in this world. That's just the way I taught you when you was growing up. And now Bodhi, they get drunk once in a while and drink. They didn't ever get drunk, but they drink, you know. And they get somebody to babysit for them. And I said, I never drink all my life, but I thought one of these days if I started in drinking, I'm just going to stay around my family. That's just the way I was thinking. If I start in drinking, I told him, you know. And I said, I know your mother never used to like drinking. And I don't blame her. His parents used to drink quite a bit, you know. But I thought, well, as long as I start to have kids, I'll never touch anything like that. I'm still thinking that way right now, you know. I'm still thinking that way. So therefore, guys quit drinking, then, gee, I feel that that's the best friend of mine.
Do your sons ever talk to you about wanting to try and quit drinking, if they don't want to drink?
No, they never. I got the funny kids. My boys. You know, I try to teach them how to do things like trapping, or like making fish wheel, or building a house. You know, if you try to do one of those things, I said, I'm 100% with you. You know, if you try for yourself, try to make something out of yourself. You know, even making a living around here. Mm-hmm. But I told my son, I said, if you want to drink, I said, I cannot tell you to quit drinking. And just like this, I say, you get around my table and then you want to eat. It's just like I said, get off the table. I don't want to feed you. That'd be the same thing I think to myself. You know. So I say, I cannot tell you to quit drinking. Not one of you are going to tell you to quit drinking. But I said, if you start in drinking, don't let the bottle be the boss of you. You buy the bottle, and you're the boss of the bottle. And if the bottle handling you, that's the time to quit. That's the time to lay off, if the bottle is pushing you around. You know. I got those things all figured out if I start in drinking. I think the bottle won't push me around. I buy the bottle. I'm the boss of the bottle. You know.
Yeah, that's important advice to give young people, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think that there's a lot of pressure when a lot of people are drinking, that everyone wants to just go in with it? I think there's a lot of pressure to do the same thing.
That's where the pressure come in, I think, is where the people are, you know, starting drinking, pretty soon just go around and buddies, you know, starting giving drink to one another. Well, there's a lot of other things that you could be buddies with. You know, it don't have to take a drink to have a buddy, but that's the way most of people think. I think it's the greatest thing right now is a drink. To meet your partner with a drink, with your buddy a drink. Well, I never think that way yet in my life. I mean, you know, if I had a buddy that's drinking, you know, I don't think I'd be too happy to give him a drink. I'd be too happy to bring him to a restaurant or some other place where I could feed him, you know. But a drinking doesn't mean that much to me to make a good friend.
Yeah, it seems like you have a lot of buddies you don't have to drink with too, huh?
Well, yeah, that's true. Like if I tell a lot of people that, I said that a lot of people like Galina, Kaiku, Nolara, Huslina, them guys know that I never drink all my life. And as soon as they see me, those people just respect me. You know, even people that are drinking respect me. Even young kids that I don't know respect me. I don't know why. Once in a while I think about it, you know. Like I go to Galena this carnival last weekend. I was up there for the carnival. A lot of young kids say, "Hello, good one. Hello, good one." Gee, that just kind of opened up my heart, you know. I don't know how this guy's young generation know me. She just heard about me. That's all I think that, you know.
You think that since you don't drink, people trust you more? They know they can count on you?
They can count on me. That's right, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm the same way, too. I'm the same way to other people that never drink, you know. Like my brother-in-law, Franklin, he was quite a drinker, Glasgow. He was quite a drinker, but he just quit, you know. Like if for the stick dance I'm thinking about next year, I kind of rely on them, you know, to help me along with some other things. Like Marilyn Ismailka, I kind of depend on her mostly.
That's when you know there's going to be a lot of things to think about and worry about, and they'll be there to help, huh?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that maybe I don't know too about this stick dance, you know. And Marilyn Ismailka is a pretty smart woman. And she know a lot of things what my mother used to tell her.
She spent a lot of time with your mother?
She spent a lot of time with my mother before my mother died. Yeah. Well, anyway, Marilyn is the same way. I mean, she know a lot of things that her people are told her, and probably a lot of things that she learned by experience too. And a lot of things that he could explain to the young generation. Like the way I think too, you know, you could explain a lot of things to the young generation. If some of them stop and think and realize what we're talking about, might do them good. But instead of just listening to some elderly talk and just keep right on going, you know, if they stop and then they think about it, then they might come to an end where it might help them or do them good.
Do you think that there are many young people who are listening?
Not that I know of. I know there's one young generation in this town. If somebody talked to him, I think he'd be pretty good, Ronnie Petka. If I talk to him, he'd listen to me. I never see him drink yet. He was drinking last year. Boy, I talked to him then, you know, when I heard he was starting to drink. I went over and talked to him because his parents were drinking, but his mother quit drinking. I started to talk with him, and then, I don't know, Uncle. Now, you better start thinking about it. Drinking doesn't mean everything. I see you have a lot of fun. You're out there full of pep, playing with those little kids, playing soccer ball, basketball up there in the gym, baseball in the summertime. I don't have to take drink to do all those things. Maybe he stopped and think, you know. And now I never see him drink anymore. Now, in fact, I was at Fairbanks and then, well, he got a girlfriend up there. Well, I don't blame him because he's young guy, you know. And then he said, "Uncle, I'm broke," he said. I said, "How much money do you need?" He said, "I need money to bring me back home." I said, "Okay, I'll give you the money. I'll give the money to go back home." So I give him the money, whatever it takes him to bring him back to here, you know. But all the winter, he said, "Well, you got to wait till I get my income tax." I said, "Okay, that's all right." I told my, "As long as you don't spend your money foolishly," I said, "I'll give you some more money even though you owe me some more money." "No, no, uncle," he said, "no. I'll give you money back plus 20%, he said, you know. I'll give you 20%. He said, "Yeah, I borrowed it too long from you." I said, "No, you don't have to pay me the percent," I said. "As long as you know what you spent your money for," I said, I'll lend you the money." Then he came down. He's been here ever since then. Now I started drawing employment, you know. I never go ask him, "What are you going to pay me back?" Personally, you came back and he told me, "Well, I got some money, uncle. I'll pay you back plus $20 extra." He said, "I don't have to make the $20. Just give me my money back, what I lent you." "No?" He said, "I borrowed it too long." I said, "No." If somebody talked to him, I know he would listen to older people, him. I know there's only one boy that's like that.
Change when they get older? Other boys, maybe they'll start thinking more about things?
Well, I think it would help a lot of young generations if they have some kind of a group meeting. Like, you know, maybe like us, we should do that. Like me, Franklin, Plasker, Simon, Clement, or other guys that never drink, you know. Talk to those young generations a little bit, and then maybe that would help them. You know, to how to survive or things like that. And they don't have no kinds of committee in those young generation have after they quit school. You know, they don't have no kinds of committee to kind of encourage them for something like that. You know, like for me, I always think that, you know, I don't have to drink to have a good time. And, but now a lot of young generation might think that, well, they're not like, people don't like them because they never drink. I heard some people, young people, say that. You say you got no friend. All that really burns me up when they say that.
When they don't drink,
you say you have no friend.
So you think that's why a lot of them drink, just so people would be their friends?
So a lot of people would be their friend, but probably the worst was going to be their friend too, you know.
Caltech and their grow up, and when those little ones grow up?
No, I don't think anybody think about that. You know. Well, Caltech has been a pretty good, I mean, We have a long time to get this school building here. Because there's nobody was speaking for us, you know. And most of the time, we had to fight our way to get a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like the sewer, I mean the running water. You know, nobody speak for us to get all those things, you know. But they thought Jakarta would be one of the places that would get running water with a sewer in, because the place never flood. You know, and then the buildings came in, Asia buildings came in. But the city council had to stick out their neck for those things, you know.
Is that when you were working on the city council?
I was on the city council when it, like this community hall. You know, we had to fight for some money in order to build that place. At first, when I was on city council, I began to think about this kind of building. But they never had enough money to give to the city to build a place like that.